headlines. The U.S. Secretary of State says Washington's so-called policy of maximum pressure against Iran has not produced results. Newly released satellite images show that Israel, which is widely believed to possess hundreds of nuclear warheads, is significantly expanding its Dimona nuke facility. Also in the headlines, UN documents show private military contractors, including infamous Blackwater, helped flow American weapons into Libya in 2019. Hello, welcome to this news. Thanks for joining us. The U.S. Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, says Washington's so-called policy of maximum pressure against Iran has not produced results. Blinken made the comment in his first international interview with the BBC. He stressed that his country is not offering Iran any upfront concessions to bring it to the negotiating table. Blinken said if Iran returns to compliance with its obligations under the 2015 nuclear deal, the U.S. would do the same. The top diplomat added that Washington and its European allies share the same objectives concerning the Iran nuclear deal. He said that other issues, including Iran's ballistic missile programs and its regional activities, also need to be addressed. That is why President Joe Biden earlier announced his readiness to re-engage with parties to the Iran deal.
We're prepared to re-engage in negotiations with the P5 plus one on Iran's nuclear program. We must also address Iran's destabilizing activities across the Middle East. And we're going to work in close cooperation with our European and other partners as we proceed.
Meanwhile, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki says that Washington has no plans to ease sanctions on Iran. She says the U.S. would not issue an executive order about returning to the nuclear deal before possible talks with Iran and the major powers. That is while Tehran has repeatedly said that Washington should lift sanctions on Iran first, before the country resumes its nuclear commitments suspended as per the terms of the JCPOA. Breaking news, Iran's stance remains steadfast in how they have relayed their position. And again here, the Iranian envoy to the UN is saying that the U.S. willingness to return to the JCPOA remains meaningless without removing Iran's sanctions. So Iran has made its position very clear that the U.S. willingness to return to the JCPOA is not good enough for Iran without removing Iran's sanctions. Political analyst Tawhid Asadi says the Biden administration is following the footsteps of his predecessor when it comes to Iran, except some verbal differences.
Practically speaking, at least when it comes to Iran's nuclear program, what we have seen so far is that Biden is trying to follow the same trajectory that Trump administration did, with a slight difference, and that is related to the statements. So they are trying to put forth some arguments based upon the claim that they're trying to fix things, but when it comes to practice, things are almost the same as they used to be during Trump administration. So far, Iran has seen nothing in practice except for some verbal statements coming from European Union and a unilateral withdrawal from the United States. I think Iran's policy in this regard is very much clear and easy to understand.
Time now for the news review of this bulletin. Released satellite images reveal a significant construction work at Israel's Dimona nuclear site. An independent group of arms control and non-proliferation experts known as the International Panel on Fissile Material published images on Thursday. The group's website says the construction has expanded in the Negev desert and appears to be actively underway. Israel is believed to be the only possessor of nukes in West Asia and estimated to have between 200 and 400 atomic warheads in its arsenal. Israel neither admits nor denies having the nukes, but activists have warned time and again of the enormous threats posed by Israel's nuclear activities. Israel has so far defied international calls to join the non-proliferation treaty and never allowed any inspection of its nuclear facilities. Dr. Marcus Papadopoulos is a historian, journalist, and author joining us from London. We also have Brent Yonkers, author and historian, who joins us from Hasselt. Okay, first to you, Dr. Papadopoulos. When you take a look at Israel, this piece of news, why is it that they are expanding their Dimona nuclear facility, And why is it that they don't allow any inspections of their facilities?
Well, the findings of these experts are disconcerting, but not surprising. I say disconcerting because the Middle East is, after all, the most volatile region in the world, and it is hardly in the interests of the region for the safety and well-being of the population in this region for a country, in this case Israel, to be expanding its nuclear capabilities. And I say unsurprising because Israel historically acts with impunity. The Israeli state was allowed to develop nuclear weapons. The Israeli state has been allowed to expand its nuclear capabilities. The Israelis are not signatories of the Non-Proliferation Treaty. And it is on that basis why Israel constitutes a very grave source of instability in the Middle East. The Israelis have the audacity to argue, both at home and abroad, for example at the United Nations, that Iran is developing nuclear weapons. I say it is simply just the audacity of the Israelis to argue that because Israel has nuclear weapons, and Iran has made it very clear that it uses nuclear power for civilian peaceful purposes only. Yet if Iran was accused of developing nuclear weapons, which of course the Israelis, the Americans and the British have claimed on numerous occasions in the past, the world would be up in arms about it. But at the same time, the world is perfectly content to not only allow Israel to have nuclear weapons, but also to allow the Israelis to develop nuclear weapons. So it is a very, very grave situation. But as I said moments ago, it is not surprising. And of course, it is in the interests of America and Britain for Israel to have nuclear weapons. Why? Because Israel is a conduit for American and British power in the Middle East. America and Britain are the outside dominant forces in the Middle East. And without the Israeli conduit, America and Britain would not be able to have the influence and power, the predominance which it has in the Middle East. And therefore, the ultimate protection for the American and British conduit is to allow Israel not only to keep its nuclear weapons, but to expand its nuclear weapon capabilities.
Back in 2018, Bert Jonkers, Israel threatened Iran with nuclear action. You've had what our guest there said, no inspections being allowed, nor is Israel a member of the NPT. You also have Saudi Arabia that has a program that does not allow any inspections, a nuclear program. But at the same time, you have the U.S. and its allies who have concentrated and zoomed in on Iran and its civilian nuclear program. Iran, which has promoted time and again in Middle East or West Asia free of nuclear weapons. Why the double standards there when it comes to Iran?
Well, I think it's a very clear clear-cut case of hypocrisy. And this is something that has happened over and over again in multiple different occasions. Every time we're talking about, you know, for example, the accusations of Iran supporting outside forces, of Iran sending militias, of Iran backing up what they call rogue governments, these are all forms of projection. These are all accusing Iran of doing things that the West and the Israelis have been doing for decades, you know, backing foreign backing terrorist organizations, for example, in the war against Syria, invading countries like they did in Libya, like they did in Iraq. These are all things that the West has been doing over and over again, and the same thing goes for this nuclear weapon policy. They accuse Iran of having a plan to develop nuclear weapons, which even if it were true, you know, it's a different matter entirely. Even if it were true, that would not be more dangerous or more serious than a country like Israel or India or Pakistan developing nuclear weapons, all of which have developed such weaponry in the past and still maintain a stockpile right now. But on top of all that, they have absolutely no evidence of the fact that of the claim, let's say, that Iran would have nuclear weapons, whereas there is tons of evidence stating that Israel, at the very least, has developed 90 nuclear warheads and possibly up to 200. We know this. This is what we call a public secret, let's say. It's not officially admitted, not officially confirmed by the Zionist entity, but it's also not denied either. And when you look at the even Western mainstream media talking about the Dimonat nuclear research facility, newspapers such as The Guardian also have no problem. This is mainstream British media. They have no problem saying Israel is developing, has developed nuclear weapons here, is still developing nuclear weapons, and likely is going to build more. This is mainstream media in the West basically blatantly admitting that this is happening. But the problem is there is no action being done against this, despite the fact that Israel is one of the worst offenders of humanitarian rights in general, of international human law, and of course also of every single rule worldwide regarding nuclear weapons. The Israelis have been selling nuclear secrets to apartheid South Africa back before apartheid fell in the early 1990s. In fact, we know that the apartheid regime in South Africa had 6 nuclear weapons prior to 1989, after which they, you know, dismantled and destroyed them because they didn't want, let's say, the majority black population to have access to these. And these nuclear weapons have already been proven beyond any reasonable doubt to, for a big part, come from Israel. At least the technology, the know-how came from the Zionist entity. And there is a whole amount of other evidence. For example, the nuclear scientist Mordechai Vanunu, who spent 18 years in jail for revealing the secrets, for whistleblowing on the Israeli nuclear program. So the fact that all of this happened shows that we know this nuclear program exists. But the reason why nothing is being done against it and why the focus is being put on Iran is, as with so many other things, unfortunately, in geopolitics, is the case is hypocrisy, Western hypocrisy, imperialist hypocrisy, trying to project their sins and their crimes on nations that stand in the way of their hegemonic plans.
Well, if I'm any type of association looking at Israel, Dr. Papadopoulos, whether it's an arms control treaty type organization or even any country, I'm looking at Israel that has bombed Syria about 50 times this past year. I'm looking at an Israel that is breaking all types of laws when it comes to the occupied Palestinian territories, that has been aggressive in nature, backed by the U.S., who has been involved in the war on Syria also. And now the idea of Israel expanding its Dimona nuclear facility, that again, you mentioned about 100 or 200 warheads, some have put that at 300 or even more. I would be very concerned. Shouldn't there be any action taken at the UN to discuss this?
Naturally, Israel is, in my estimation, an exceptionally grave threat to peace and stability in the Middle East, or whatever is left of peace and stability in the Middle East. The argument, the rationale of the Israeli government for invading Lebanon, for interfering, violating Syrian independence and sovereignty, is, quote, self-defense. Well, that is a ludicrous argument, and it has no leg to stand on under international law. Because if every country in the world adopted that line of argument, that we are going to invade a bordering country in order to defend ourselves, then the world would be witness to untold numbers of wars occurring, not on a yearly basis, but on a monthly basis. The problem, as I said, is that Israel acts with impunity. Israel has a blank check, so to speak, from Washington and London, and it has done ever since its creation. The Americans and the British understand, as I said moments ago, that ultimately it's their predominance in the Middle East rests with Israel. Israel is the conduit for American and British predominance in the Middle East. Saudi Arabia is also a conduit for American and British influence and power in the Middle East, but Israel is the main one. And I'm glad that the other guest made reference to British mainstream media, and in particular the hideous Guardian newspaper. British mainstream media, on a regular basis, is hysterical about Iran developing weapons of mass destruction. Yet British mainstream media says nothing about not only Israel expanding its nuclear capabilities, but the very fact that Israel unofficially has nuclear weapons. And the Guardian newspaper, in my opinion, is the most repulsive of all the newspapers in Britain, because the Guardian, like all other national newspapers in Britain, is neither free nor independent nor credible. Leading up to Mohammed bin Salman's visit to Britain a few years ago, the Guardian newspaper, which purports to be a defender of human rights, ran numerous advertisements in one of its editions, which brought in a vast amount of money from the Guardian. So the Guardian doesn't care about human rights. The Guardian doesn't care about the Middle East and the well-being of the ordinary person in the Middle East. No, the Guardian is simply another newspaper in Britain, which is part of the British establishment.
Thank you very much for that. Dr. Marcus Papadopoulos, historian, journalist, and author. Thank you, Brett Yonkers, author and historian. And that does it for the News Review. Thanks for tuning in. Welcome back. Saudi Arabia is planning to invest billions of dollars in its domestic military industry amid international calls for Western countries to end their arms sales to the regime. The kingdom's military industry regulator has unveiled the plan, saying more than $20 billion will be invested in the sector over the next 10 years. It will also allocate the same amount on research and development. The regulator said that Saudi Arabia will spend half of its military budget locally by 2030. This comes as the country's arms suppliers, mainly the U.S. and some Europeans, have been criticized for their deals with the kingdom over the Yemen onslaught. Rights groups say the suspension of such deals would help put an end to the crisis in Yemen. UN documents show private military contractors, including infamous Blackwater, had helped flow American weapons into Libya for an assault on the UN-backed government there. UN experts have obtained documents in an 18-month investigation that shed new light on Washington's weapons proliferation regime. They indicate that private security firms attempted to bring Western military experts, as well as equipment such as drones, speedboats, and assault weapons into Libya in 2019. That's in order to assist renegade General Khalifa Haftar, who was seeking to take control of the country with the backing of some Arab states, including Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates. Any transfer of U.S. weapons to a third party is a potential violation of U.N. arms embargoes, as well as America's own laws. But instances reported by the media and rights groups suggest American arms have often ended up in Libya in violation of the U.N. Charter. A report from the U.S. Department of Homeland Security shows that right-wing extremists were responsible for the majority of terrorist attacks in the country in 2020. The report is based on a review of last year's domestic terror incidents. This is the first time the U.S. government has publicly acknowledged the rise of right-wing violence, despite being documented and investigated in the past. The report comes just weeks after supporters of former President Donald Trump, many of them members of extremist groups, attacked U.S. Congress. Following the January 6th incident, the new administration called for a review of domestic extremism, describing it as a serious and growing national security threat. Another independent report also indicates that white supremacists and other extremist groups had hatched the two-thirds of terror plots in the U.S. in the first 8 months of 2020. And that is World News. Let's go bye for now.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Dow Chemical and DuPont are American chemical corporations. These two chemical giants have become the number one companies in the chemical sector. Today, they make billions of euros in profit, but behind this resounding success lies a dark secret: toxic contamination and pollution, which has affected thousands, causing disabilities, cancers, and even death. I'm Daniel Arya, and this is Aperture. For decades, Dow Chemical and DuPont factories have been secretly dumping their toxic waste into rivers, groundwater systems, and soil, and keeping the tragic consequences a secret. Sadly, the constant exposure to toxic waste spares no one, neither surrounding residents nor the company's employees. Stay with us as this week's documentary sheds light over years of lies and impunity through the analysis of samples in confidential documents.
At the end of the 60s, Leotis Jones was a prisoner in Holmesburg, a suburb of Philadelphia in the United States. A prisoner, but also a guinea pig for industry, like thousands of other inmates.
H-block. This is where all the medical testing, the human experimentation was going on.
How many times have you taken that corridor?
Oh, man, I'm about maybe 25, 30 times. You know, but there was different tests that they was running. And sometimes I was on like two tests at a time, you know?
Okay.
This practice was confidential at the time because multinational chemical companies came here to test the risks of their products. To earn a few dollars, the prisoners participated in several tests, but none of them knew what they were being given.
What they would do, they would put the tape and stick it and pull it, stick it and pull it, stick it and pull it. Then they would put a drop in the substance, whatever it was that was in it, on that area.
And what happened after?
All over my body, my skin pigmentation got light in certain areas.
How long did it last?
About a year, somewhere around there. And they had you signing a paper stating that it was informed consent, but it was just a paper to waive them from being liable if anything go wrong.
One company did everything they could to keep this a secret. They even paid Leotis Jones for his silence. Dow Chemical. The leading manufacturer of plastics in the world, and the third largest manufacturer of pesticides, Dow Chemical has an annual turnover of $48 billion and 50,000 employees around the globe. In the wake of this chemical giant, there's an industry of staggering profitability, an industry in a frantic race to innovate. Each year, their new toxic products reach the market, These multinationals all have one thing in common, a culture of secrecy.
You're following us.
Polluting lands, rivers, and groundwater. Behind the fumes of these factories, we have discovered tens of thousands of victims. In India, children are born with severe disabilities. In the U.S., those who have dedicated their lives to this industry...
Everybody wanted to go there because for the money, for the benefits, it was secure.
...are now paying the price.
Those guys are all dead, and I should have been. Why'd they lie?
Faced with these tragedies, the chemical giants have adopted a specific course of action. Lack of transparency, cynicism, denial. In the meantime, they continue to reap the profits. In Holmesburg Prison, Dow experimented on the inmates with one of the most carcinogenic products in the world, dioxin. It's one of the molecules in Agent Orange, the powerful herbicide that Dow produced for the American Army during the Vietnam War. The Air Force dumped it on the Viet Cong for a decade. At the same time, the tests were being performed at Holmesburg. From that time on, Dow was already aware of the dangers of dioxin. The company put it in writing in this confidential note from June 1965. Dioxin is exceptionally toxic. Some months later, Dow would study its side effects on the prisoners.
Hey, man, what can I say? There's no way in the world if they would have informed us back then that we would participate. No. No, no, I wouldn't have. They were trying to cover it up. They wouldn't have made it now.
We found one of the doctors that performed the tests at Holmesburg in the 1960s. Today, he's an oncologist at Northwestern Hospital in Chicago. Sigmund Weitzman is preparing to retire. He is one of the few witnesses still alive.
Every day, I had a row of 20 convicts. They were coming in all day. Okay. So
all day long, people were coming in?
Oh, absolutely. It was a machine.
In 1967, Sigmund Weitzman was only 21 years old. He was an intern at Holmesburg. The senior physician overseeing the tests never told him the names of the products used on the prisoners. He only realized later that he had administered dioxin to human beings. We show him what Dow knew back then about the chemical.
This cereal is exceptionally toxic. No wonder it's confidential. This is 50 years old.
Yeah.
It's very upsetting.
This is the first time you read these documents?
Yes.
I'm
appalled. I'm just very... It's so casual. I also felt personally guilty that I was participating in something so horrible. You don't give people poison. It's just simple. You know, as if these people aren't people. They're just experimental animals. Nowadays, it would be criminal.
Dow was never prosecuted. When prisoners tried to take action against the company, the statute of limitations had expired. This multinational would not only poison inmates with dioxin, but also tens of thousands of people in Midland, Michigan, in the north of the U.S. Midland. The birthplace of Dow.
Here at the Dow Chemical Company in Midland, Michigan, revolutionary chemical killers.
This is where Agent Orange was manufactured. Its production created waste extremely high in dioxin. Dow secretly dumped this waste into the river that flows through the city. In 1981, one man would discover the truth.
We had a conclusion there that Dow was a major source, if not the only source, to the river, and certainly to the community, and that people were at risk.
At the time, Milton Clark was a toxicologist for the EPA, the government agency responsible for environmental protection. With his colleagues, he wrote a report condemning Dow's practices. But right before the report's publication, the corporation would succeed in pressuring the acting chief of the EPA in Washington. Pressured by his superiors, Milton Clark was forced to censor the report. The result? Pollution in Midland, Michigan would continue for 30 years with impunity. And the executives at Dow would continue denying the dangers.
There is no health problem in Midland. There is absolutely no evidence of dioxin doing any damage to humans.
In 2006, one woman would attack the multinational again. At the time, Mary Gade oversaw all the offices at the Environmental Agency in the Midland region. She had leverage. She'd been nominated by the President of the United States, George W. Bush. Newly appointed, she demands that more testing be done in the city.
We found these astronomically high levels of dioxin, levels that my staff think may be some of the highest levels ever found in the United States. One of the things that was astonishing to me when this came to my attention was that for almost 30 years, this very serious problem had not actually been addressed.
Where have you found these high levels?
So yeah, we found it in yards alongside the river system, parks where children play, where people launch their boats, where fishermen put their boats in the water. This is where people live. So I immediately called Dow senior officials and said, we're very concerned about these levels. We need you to take action. As that unfolded, The company was not happy. It's extremely expensive to clean up this much contamination, hundreds of millions of dollars, if not more.
To lodge a complaint, Dow goes directly to the White House.
I was asked on May 1st of 2008 to either resign or quit by the end of the day.
Okay. Were you surprised?
Yes, very much so. In my 30-some years of working in environmental protection and much of that spent in the government, I would have never expected that. Dow is acting in its own interests, so Dow is trying to make sure that it saved as much money as possible.
As a result of these maneuvers, for decades, thousands of people have lived surrounded by dioxin without knowing the risks. We wanted to meet these victims. But in Midland, it's hard to loosen tongues. Dow has supported the city for 120 years, and reminders are at every corner. At the bank, the stadium, the library, the public park, the high school. The shadow of the company is everywhere. Only one person agreed to break the code of silence. Alice Buchelter has spent most of her life near the river. This is where she raised her family.
Oh, this is where we used to have the zip line way back here.
Okay.
The land is very fertile, and it was used for motocross trails and hiking trails and dune buggy trails and just, you know, recreation in the woods. For a kid, it was like a wonderland. It was, you know, an adventure. They could explore and they could build forts and they could do all those things.
No one advised you that there was dioxin down there?
Nope. We just thought we found a magical spot for us to play and raise a family.
For nearly 40 years, the Buchelter family would live here, blissfully unaware of their toxic surroundings. Every spring, the river floods their garden, bringing in a fresh wave of dioxin. Alice Buchelter would not discover the true extent of the contamination until 2007, when tests were conducted in her garden by the local environmental agency. The levels of dioxin were up to 17 times higher than the legal limit for toxicity.
I have, my oldest daughter has autoimmune diseases.
You have five kids?
Mm-hmm.
How many of them do have autoimmune disease?
I would say all of them. Some to a lesser degree and some to a more severe degree. And my husband had a very malignant colon cancer. It was a real quick onset.
Her late husband, Herbert Buchelter, was a doctor. A few days before he passed away, he expressed a last wish.
He was brave enough to, when he was dying, to have his blood drawn when he didn't have very much blood left. Dioxin levels were taken the Thursday before he died on a Sunday. He was willing to do it to ascertain that there was a connection. The results of my husband's, this is his levels.
These are the actual breakdown.
Alex Buchelter's husband had 64.5 nanograms of dioxin per liter of blood, three times the U.S. average.
We had been married 46 years when he died. And and would I have treasured 10 more years? Yeah. And, you know, that's been a major impact on my life.
The American Environmental Agency has finally forced Dow to clean the river. But the process has only just begun. It could take decades and cost hundreds of millions of dollars. However, no date is set for decontaminating neighboring yards like Alice Buchelter's. Dow refused all our requests for an interview. The multinational merely sent us an email stating that we seek science-based solutions that protect human health while also contributing to the well-being of the local community. On the other side of the world, another contamination is wreaking havoc. As a result of one of the worst industrial catastrophes in history, thousands of children have been affected. But Dow has never dealt with it. It happened in India, in Bhopal. In 1984, the local chemical plant exploded, killing 20,000 people and releasing tons of toxic products. At the time, the factory belonged to Union Carbide, a pesticide giant that Dow would buy up in 2001. The site of the Bhopal explosion is still saturated with chemical pollution. Over the years, these products have spread into the city's groundwater systems. For 15 years, the inhabitants have demanded a full decontamination. In vain, Dow refuses to act. The decaying steel site is still accessible today. Here we meet Mr. Shuan, a former engineer. At the time, he was in charge of the storage of the chemicals in this laboratory.
There's so many chemicals still remaining in this quality control lab. Very few bottles are now at present. But after the disaster, this quality control lab was full of the chemicals, bottle, drums, and after 32 years, still they are lying.
Is that dangerous?
Yeah, it is dangerous because there is no proper care of these premises.
Among the products stored in the factory, there was lindane, an extremely toxic insecticide. Today it is forbidden all over the world. According to our guide, the soil surrounding the factory is full of it.
The whole area is highly contaminated. They are dumping all toxic waste effluent on the ground. Right now you can feel the smell of the benzene hexachloride on this spot. And it is dangerous to stay here for a long period.
Benzene hexachloride is the scientific name for lindane. We go down to the area of the spill to take some samples. The smell is unbearable. We'll have the soil analyzed. Just before leaving, Mr. Schwan shows us where the pesticides were made. Beads of mercury lie exposed in the open air. According to the World Health Organization, this is one of the top 10 most dangerous chemical products in the world. We take some more samples. The results of our two tests are astonishing. Inside the factory, the level of mercury is 5 million times higher than the environmental standard. At this level of concentration, the risks of developing liver, skin, or lung cancers are considerable. The levels of lindane are just as alarming, exceeding 100,000 times the standard level. This can provoke severe cases of cerebral degeneration. Yet only 20 meters away, we see children playing cricket on the contaminated ground. The chemical contamination stretches far beyond the walls of the factory. Toxic waste has penetrated the land and has polluted the water of many neighborhoods. Up to 3 kilometers from the factory, 50,000 people live there. We went to take water samples to identify the molecules present in their wells. Like in Shakya's family home, they've lived in the house for almost 30 years. The water they consume contains 1.9 micrograms of mercury per liter, 2 times the standard level of toxicity. The problem is, even in boiled water, mercury is still carcinogenic. In other areas of Bhopal, it's not mercury, but lindane that wreaks havoc on human lives. This is a problem in Preetnagar, a neighborhood situated 1 kilometer away from the factory. The municipality has had drinkable water since 2011, but for many years, the inhabitants have been drinking severely polluted water. That's the case for Rukmani and her 13-year-old daughter, Rachna. Since her birth, she's suffered from limited mental development and muscular dystrophy. She can neither talk nor stand up by herself. Rukmani, her mother, drank contaminated water every day during her pregnancy. A few months after Rachna's birth, a governmental study was conducted in the area. The levels of lindane were extremely high in the water, 17 times the World Health Organization limit. Due to her disabilities, Rachna has never been able to go to school. Every day she comes to the Shingari Rehabilitation Center. Without these daily exercises, she would be completely paralyzed today. Rashida B. is the founder of the center. She has watched all these children grow up.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Stories from the past. Stories from the lives of the infallibles. Stories from different parts of the world. On the Lantern.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Brothers and sisters, thank you so very much for joining us on yet another episode of The Lantern. In life, we will always be faced with situations that demand a great measure of assessment and evaluation from us. There are numerous narrations from the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, which advise us with great emphasis to think whatever we want to do through. This does not necessarily mean that we have to become cowardly in life and timid and overcautious and not be able to take chances and risks. But a person who tries throughout their life to develop a sense of awareness regarding themselves first and foremost, and the situation and conditions around them, and constantly strives to prioritize Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and His satisfaction in everything they do, like we've mentioned in so many episodes before, will develop a furqan within themselves. A person who lives in that state of awareness constantly will always be careful not to make stupid mistakes. But then again, we're human, and things happen in life that we wish they hadn't. I forgot to listen to a short story. I forgot for us to listen to a short story. Let's do that, and we'll be right back.
The whistle is the title of today's story on Lantern. 200 years ago, there lived in Boston a little boy whose name was Benjamin Franklin. On the day that he was 7 years old, his mother gave him a few pennies. It was the first money that he had ever had. "You may buy something if you wish," said his mother. "You must be careful not to spend these foolishly." The little fellow ran into the street. As Benjamin ran down the street, he wondered what he should buy. But there were 14 boys and girls older than he and two little sisters who were younger. What a big family he was, and the father was a poor man. No wonder the lad had never owned a toy. He had not gone far when he met a larger boy who was blowing a whistle. "I wish I had that whistle," he said. The big boy looked at him and blew it again. "Oh, what a pretty sound it made." "I have some pennies," said Benjamin. "You may have them if you will give me the whistle, all of them." "Yes, all of them." "Well, it's a bargain," said the boy, and he gave the whistle to Benjamin and took the pennies. Little Benjamin Franklin was very happy, for he was only 7 years old. He ran home as fast as he could. "See, mother," he said, "I have bought a whistle." "How much did you pay for it?" "All the pennies he gave me." "Oh, Benjamin," one of his brothers asked to see the whistle. Well, he said, "you've paid a dear price for this thing. It's only a penny whistle, and a poor one at that." The little boy saw what a mistake he had made. "Never mind, my child," said his mother very kindly. "The lesson you have learned today is never to pay too dear for a whistle." Benjamin Franklin lived to be a very old man, but he never forgot that lesson.
The Lantern.
Under the light of lantern, we'll look at the story which indicates a moral aspects of our life.
Mm-hmm. So the story is about Benjamin Franklin. Now, I personally would not take Benjamin Franklin as my role model. Not just because we have so many other great role models, whether infallible, whether our scholars, whether our elites and great thinkers, our philosophers, but also because, well, I don't necessarily agree with his worldview. But that doesn't mean that he did not have certain wisdoms of his own. And there's a hadith from Imam Ali alayhi salam where His Eminence says, don't look at who says it, look at what is said. And of course, this hadith must be taken into context. But in this context, I think it would be safe for us to contemplate on this life experience that Benjamin Franklin went through, and it was so crucial to him that it stuck in his mind throughout his life, and it formed many of the decisions he made in his future years. It's very interesting as well. I was reading a letter he had written to one of his friends regarding the matter of not spending too much on a whistle. And at the end of the letter, he says, in short, I conceive that great part of the miseries of mankind are brought upon them by the false estimates they have made of the value of things, and by their giving too much for their whistles. And I think this is a wise word that we can take from whoever says it. And the fact that we have verses in the Quran and a hadith from the Ahlul Bayt that back that up gives it validity. We honestly do that a lot in life. As a matter of fact, we do that toward life itself. We give it too much value. We stress upon it too much. We think about it too much. We struggle and strive and endeavor for it too much. And we forget that this life is just a bridge. It's not our destination and purpose. We're meant for something and somewhere greater and other than this world. As Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says in the Quran, وَالْآخِرَةُ خَيْرٌ وَأَبْقَى. The afterlife is better and is more and is everlasting. This world is fleeting, and it doesn't make sense if we really put things into perspective for a person to invest on the bridge. Sure, a person, we talked about being cautious, how our religion tells us to be cautious, to think things through before making an attempt, and a cautious person would invest in building themselves a steady bridge. But a steady bridge for what? A steady bridge that would not fall and crumble while they are trying to pass it in order to get to the other side. It is upon me as a Muslim, as a God-wary person, a person who is trying to live in a state of self-awareness, a person who strives to be a better version of themselves constantly. It's reasonable for me to try to put my efforts into things that I know will last for me always. Now, we just said that this world is fleeting. It does not last. Tops 80 years. So 2 plus 2 equals the long-lasting thing I have to be investing in is in my afterlife. And I need to fortify anything in this world that would help me achieve that objective. I need to be very careful not to make false estimates about the value of this world. I need to be aware that certain things in this world are really valuable, but they are valuable in terms of how they would serve my afterlife. Thank you for being with us on this episode of The Lantern. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
ألا بذكر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.